Whispering
Streets. And here is Hope Winslow.
Hello. Arthur Parkhurst opened the letter from his daughter. Clara was visiting in New York. She was staying with a friend she'd met at school in Switzerland. It didn't take Arthur long to read the letter. It was very short. All of Clara's letters were short and definitely to the point. He raised his eyes from a single page and spoke angrily to his secretary.
Listen to this, Miss Webster. Dear Daddy, I need some more money. My allowance is barely enough to carry me when I'm home, and here in New York, it's just a drop in a bucket. 200 will keep me going for a week or so, but 300 would be better. Love to Mother and yourself, and send the check as soon as possible. What do you think of that, Miss Webster?
She's spoiled.
You're darn right she's spoiled.
And you're to blame. You're the one who spoiled her. Shall I make out a check for, how much, Mr. Parkhurst?
Oh, I'll send her 200. 300 would go just as fast as 200.
Very well. And now if you'll sign your name.
I'm so darn tired of signing my name to checks. Claire had her monthly allowance just 5 days ago. And you know how generous it is.
I do indeed.
Well, what's the answer to it all, I wonder? What on earth is the answer? How can I... I won't talk to anyone.
Very well. Miss Parkhurst's office. Miss Webster speaking. Oh, Mrs. Parkhurst. Well, what can I do for you today? Oh, yes, I'll ask him.
You'll ask me what?
Mrs. Parkhurst pays the household bills today. Did you leave her any money?
Of course I did. Tell her to look in my study. I stuck a check in the corner of the desk blotter. She was still asleep when I left, and I didn't want to wake her.
You were asleep when he left, Mrs. Parkhurst, and he didn't want to wake you. So he stuck the check in the corner of the desk blotter in his study. Oh, not at all, Mrs. Parkhurst. Goodbye.
My wife takes after my daughter. Money, money, money. And more money.
It's a great pity.
A great pity? It's a crime, that's what it is. I'm just a walking bank account.
You have a huge house, you have a large staff of servants, and a constant stream of guests, and the bills must be paid on time, Mr. Parkhurst. You can't blame your wife for...
Hello, Dad.
Weren't you ever taught to knock on doors, Brian?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad, but... Say, I might have made my entrance at an inconvenient time, come to think of it. I might have found Beautiful over there sitting on your lap, I suppose. How you doing, Beautiful?
The name is Webster.
The tone's chilly. Hey, look, Dad, I need some money.
Don't tell me. So you need money, do you? Well, why money, of all things?
Well, I got into a little game last night. I lost and gave my IOU. It's a debt of honor.
Huh.
Did you say something, Beautiful?
No, but I could be shot for what I'm thinking.
So could I, Miss Webster. How much, Brian?
200.
I'm sending a check for $200 to your sister.
Why should she get extra money? The way she throws money around...
Speak for yourself, Brian. You and your debts of honor. How old are you, anyway?
You know, blamed well, I'm 24.
And you've never made any attempt to earn an honorable living. Well, it's probably my own fault. I've never forced you to go to work.
Oh, who's kidding who, Dad? I don't force easy.
Make out a check for $200, Miss Webster. To whom do you owe this money, Brian?
Oh, you can just make it out to cash.
I prefer to make it out to a specific name.
Okay. Michael Grady. He's a barman at the Blue Flame. He staked me last night.
Oh, you keep fine company, Brian. You're a son any father would be proud to acknowledge. Make out the check for 200, Miss Webster, and I'll sign it.
If you're stationed in Italy, do you know what this phrase means?
Voi sarete ricompensati.
Well, it means you will be rewarded. Now, you may not be stationed where Italian is spoken, but no matter where you are overseas, you will be rewarded in many ways if you learn the language. Have you ever stopped to realize that your attitude towards the people of the country where you are reflects upon your service and upon the United States? It's important that you try to make a good impression on the people of that country. You will want to make friends for personal reasons, too. And one of the best gestures of friendship that you can make is to learn the language of the country where you are stationed. Mastery of a new language enables you to understand and appreciate the people who speak it. With a growing ability to speak and understand another tongue, a whole new world is open to you. Yes, you will be rewarded, and you will make many new friends if you give yourself a break and learn their language.
And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
Brian had taken his check and left with a wink at Miss Webster and a scowl for his father. A scowl that Arthur Parkhurst interpreted correctly.
I doubt very much that he owes $200 to this Grady character, Miss Webster. He probably wanted to chisel a bit, to make some money on the deal. The way I'm feeling, I'd like to jump off a bridge or go to the end of the world. I'm not dramatizing myself. I mean every word.
If you do, you're not thinking very constructively. Neither jumping off a bridge nor running away would accomplish anything.
Oh, what do you mean?
You're talking suicide because you feel that your family thinks of you as an animated dollar sign, as a checkbook with hands and feet. But if you did jump off a bridge, you'd be leaving your family an enormous insurance, and they'd go their merry way without interruption or any sort of control.
Well, you have a good head on your shoulders, Miss Webster. What would you do if you were in my shoes?
Well, I'd take steps to correct the situation. I'm in a spot myself. In love with a man that I can't trust as far as I throw a grand piano. I don't know what to do about it. I'm not asking for advice. I must solve my own problem. I merely told you as much as I did so that you'd realize you weren't the only one.
Misery loves company. Well, I'm asking you for advice. Think out a watertight plan for me, Miss Webster. What can I do to make life worth living? I don't have any pleasure. I don't have any relaxation. My nose is held to the grindstone constantly. I don't have any affection from my children or from my wife. Claire and Brian ignore me, or patronize me, which is worse. And it's years since Dora got up to eat breakfast across the table from her husband. But go on, Miss Webster. Give me a plan of action.
Well, you could vanish, of course, with the company funds. You could leave your family to figure out their own salvation. You could fix it so they'd have to work if they wanted to eat. But that wouldn't be quite fair because, as I said a moment ago when we were talking about Claire, you brought this on yourself, so...
Well, go on, Miss Webster.
As a matter of fact, I do have an idea. It may not develop the way you want it to develop, but at least you'll know where you stand. This will be the first step.
Well, you're tearing up Claire's check.
Yes, so I am. The second step will be to send your daughter a telegram. Your name will be signed to it, but I'll do the wording.
Arthur Parkhurst chuckled over the telegram Miss Webster composed. He chuckled over the plan she outlined. And two nights later, when he went home to the huge brick mansion in which he lived and found his family waiting for him en masse in the living room, he chuckled inwardly. It was his wife who acted as spokesman.
Well, what is this, Arthur? Why did you have Miss Webster phone us and say that you wanted to talk to us in a group? Has anything gone wrong?
For your sake, Daddy, I hope something's wrong. I was having a whale of a time in New York. If you brought me back here for no good reason...
I brought you back for a very good reason, Claire.
Well, dish the dirt and make it snappy, Dad. I have a cocktail date.
Which I wouldn't interfere with for all the rice in China. I'll state the case simply and in words of one syllable. This goose has laid his last golden egg. Or should I say gander?
Well, a male goose is a gander. Yes, that's right. Your last go- golden egg, Arthur.
A disciplinary measure, Daddy. Are you doing this for the good of our souls?
I don't take the discipline very readily,
Dad. I don't enjoy being treated like
a... If I'm treating you like anything at all, Dora, I'm treating you like a wife. I'm taking you into my confidence. I'm asking for your help, because I need help. As for you, Claire, and you too, Brian, what I have to say affects you too.
What's this all about, Daddy?
I won't beat around the bush. I'll just say that my plant is on the brink of failure. We'll fold up within the week. My directors will meet tomorrow. They'll give me the coup de grace then.
You can't mean that, Arthur.
It's impossible.
From now on, we'll all have to live very simply. And I mean simply.
But, Dad, I thought you were loaded.
So did I, Daddy. I thought your factory was absolutely foolproof.
Nothing in this world is foolproof. No more allowances for you, Claire. No more $200 checks. And that goes for you too, Brian. As for your debts of honor, well, you'll have to pay them yourself. And quite a few other things as well. When I said yesterday that I'd never forced you to go to work, you told me you didn't force easy. Well, I'm not forcing you now. Circumstances over which I have no control are forcing you. Dora?
Yes, Arthur? Is it my turn now?
Dora, we'll have to sublet this house, complete with the servants. The other day you told me, as a joke, that you knew someone who had offered to lease it. Well, it's not a joke any longer. The money that we get for the house will pay your rent in a small apartment, and we'll take care of taxes and insurance and such things while I...
Well, go on, Arthur, while you...
While I go to some other city and look for a job. When I have the job, if I get one, it isn't easy for a man of 55 to start over from scratch. You may join me or not, as you prefer. Well, I guess I've stated the case. I can only say that we haven't much time. I'd advise you to call your friend no later than tomorrow, Dora, about the house. I'm going into my study. I have to work a few things out to do some figuring.
But, Daddy!
I must go to my study, Claire. You heard me. I brought some papers home. I've spoiled you all outrageously, but now the spoiling days are over. I wish you kids were spiritually equipped to take this on the chin. I wish your educations would supply you with a means of livelihood. But I'm afraid they won't. I suppose you blame me bitterly as soon as I'm out of earshot. But it doesn't make much difference, does it? Not now.
Arthur Parkhurst, with his shoulders properly bowed, walked out of the living room away from his astounded family. As he crossed the threshold, as the heavy velvet portieres swished to behind him, he could hear a babble of voices, but he couldn't distinguish the words. He went into his study and seated himself at his desk, started to laugh. And then suddenly it had ceased to be a laughing matter. Well, he'd taken the first step to put Miss Webster's plan into operation. But how would it all end?
Suppose for a moment that instead of being one of today's men and women in uniform, you were to go back 100 years and become Billy Yank or Johnny Reb. How was military life during the Civil War? What about medical care, for example? Well, one thing is certain, it wasn't very good 100 years ago. It's hard to believe, but during the Civil War, 4 Yankee soldiers died of sickness for every one killed in battle. In fact, deaths from diarrhea and dysentery alone exceeded deaths on the battlefield. New regiments quite frequently had 2/3 of their men on the sick list. Why was the sickness rate so high? For many reasons. In the first place, both the Union and Confederate armies contained many men who were unfit for military service. Although the value of vaccination to prevent smallpox was well known, immunization was not a part of the induction process, and many men died whose deaths could have been easily avoided. Of course, the ways of fighting many diseases were not known during the Civil War. Germs hadn't been heard of. Sanitation measures were pitiful. Today, the men and women who are physically qualified for military service have the best in medical care from the time of their induction. Inoculations, sanitary measures, and good living conditions keep sickness at a minimum. And when sickness or accident does occur, there are expert physicians to treat it. Yes, there can be a lot of improvements in 100 years. Today's soldier, sailor, and airman has a lot more in the way of medical care than he would have had in the days of Billy Yank or Johnny Reb.
And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
No word of sympathy from Dora. Nothing from Claire but an I'll be darned. Nothing from Brian at all. Arthur could feel hatred seeping in through his study, seeping through the velvet portieres and across the hall and beneath the heavy carved door. He sat for a long while with his head bent and his lips a thin line. And suddenly the door was jerked open and slammed shut. He glanced up.
Someday you're going to learn to knock on a door, Brian.
Here's hoping. Look, Dad, you took the wind out of my sails.
Yes, for once you were practically speechless.
That's right. I'm sorry as the deuce, Dad. Well, that's not why I'm here. As a matter of fact, a pal of mine is going into the construction business. His father's taking him. He offered me a job last week, and I turned him down flat. But I happen to know that the job is still open.
You mean you'll apply for it?
And get it. Well, you think I'm a dope, and I don't blame you. But some people think I have a couple of brains in my head, and well, from now on, I'm going to use them. So you needn't worry about me.
Well, that's a relief.
Or Mom, either. I'll kick in toward her support as soon as I'm on a payroll.
Well, that's very, very decent of you, Brian.
What the heck, Dad? You were swell while you had it. Well, so long. See you later.
What are you trying to do, Junior? Knock me down.
For 2 cents, Clara. Well, what do you want?
I want to have a talk with Daddy. And you can listen, Brian, with both of your fat ears. Look, Daddy. Well, while I was in New York, I went to a shop on Fifth Avenue to buy a dress. And I was offered a job as a model. Thanks to you, I know how to wear clothes. I'll get a salary and a commission on any selling that I do. And I have lots of friends who'll buy from me. I'll blackmail them into doing it.
Why, Claire.
Maybe it would be a good idea if Mom came to New York with me. We could have a little apartment together. Until you're on your feet, that is.
You have good stuff in you, Claire. I may as well admit that you and Brian have surprised me. Thanks a lot, kids. Now run along.
Yes, run along. I want to speak to your father privately. Well, don't stand there staring at me, Brian. Are you hurt, Claire? Run along and close the door.
What are you doing here, Dora?
I was stunned when you made your announcement, Arthur, but I'm not stunned any longer. And if you think I'll let you go off alone to look for a job in a strange city, you're insane.
I'm insane?
Yes. While you're looking for a job, dear, you'll have moments of discouragement and you'll need somebody to give you a pep talk, the way I used to when we were first married. And, well, lots of nights you'll be dead tired and need someone to comfort you. You've been so busy these last few years with the factory that I haven't wanted to disturb you. Well, at least that's the way it was at first. And then I got out of the habit of being close to you. Darling, maybe this failure is the best thing that could have happened to us. We may have lost all our money, dear, but we've saved our marriage.
Miss Webster, Arthur Parker's secretary, looked up from her typewriter as her boss came into the office the next morning. He was late. He'd had a long, lingering breakfast with his wife. Miss Webster opened her mouth to speak, but he forestalled her.
I have great news, Miss Webster.
I have some news, too.
Well, I'll tell mine first. I pulled our trick on my wife and the kids last night, expecting them to disown me. But Brian offered to get an immediate job.
You're joking.
No, I'm not. Furthermore, Claire said she was going to model in New York, and my wife was... Well, Miss Webster, all at once, Dora was the girl I'd married almost 30 years ago.
Did you tell them that it was all a gag?
Oh, not yet. I wouldn't want to take the edge off their... Well, their gallantry. It would have been cruel. No, I'll tell them later when they've proved themselves. I'll say I've been given a breathing spell by the board of directors.
Will you?
Well, it's the only way. I'll say that perhaps I can pull some chestnuts out of the fire.
I'm glad you didn't tell them that it was all a gag.
I knew you'd see it my way. Well, what's your news?
Read this memo, Mr. Parkhurst.
I'll give it here. I'll be darned. It's from the board of directors.
Yes.
Well, this is a surprise. So that last patent didn't hold water. So we're in for litigation. And 6 months' work gone down the drain. Miss Webster, the factory really is in bad shape.
It's an ugly coincidence, isn't it? I feel as if I were tempting fate when I suggested that you... Mr. Parkhurst, you're smiling.
Of course I'm smiling. Why shouldn't I? When I go to the director's meeting this morning, I'll ask for that breathing space. And I'm sure I'll get it. I'll work like crazy to pull every chestnut out of the fire. And I'll win, Miss Webster. How can I lose with a family like mine?
Sometimes, unexpected people display grace under pressure. Sometimes, the ones we distrust come through magnificently in the moment of emergency. Miss Webster, Arthur Parker's secretary, was trying to work out a problem of her own, remember?
Now, here is Hope Winslow to tell you more about Ginny Webster.
Yes, Ginny Webster had a problem. And how? For she loved a man she couldn't trust. Was there any chance that a romance with so many strikes against it could come to a happy ending? Until then, this is Hope Winslow saying goodbye from the Whispering Streets.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sengster. Featured in the cast was Kathy Lewis as Hope Winslow. Others in today's story were Russell Thorson, Charlotte Lawrence, Irene Tedrow, Gloria Grant, and Bob Ellis. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Dan Cubberly.
Whispering Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.